Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book, In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, save 50% on the new Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I look forward to the hanging in portion of the year.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button. It's a great way to keep up with us, all the interviews that I put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. 3 a week to keep you updated on your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. That's me, I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I get to catch up with Madison Cunningham. We're going to be talking about her new album, Revealer, her sophomore record that finds her once again Grammy nominated. In fact, she's going to tell us about one of the last times she was Grammy nominated and being mistaken as a waitstaff during one of the parties. She'll tell us about writing about the sad moments in her life from the past few years and creating a piece of work that feels like it's in motion. Madison's also going to discuss her appreciation of Jeff Buckley's music. In fact, we'll both nerd out over that a little bit. Her recent collaboration with Aoife O'Donovan and working with drummer Matt Chamberlain. It's all that and much more. Talking Revealer. It's Kyle Meredith with Madison Cunningham.
Hi, how's it going?
I am once again just like knocked out by what you've done musically on this new record. I was such a fan of the last record. I want to call it the first record. I know that's murky waters. If it's the first record, is it sort of the second record? But whatever the case, you've done it once again. This album is so good.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say. Yeah, I think on principle, I consider the last album to be the first album.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
Yeah, I'll go with that. That's entirely. Oh, and congratulations, because I do believe you're Grammy nominated again.
Yeah, I think that is true.
So what is that like? What it was, because you've done this before. You once or twice now been nominated, right? I think. And
right. Yeah. Twice before now, yeah. Which is, yeah, it's a very strange reality for me.
Because that's got to be something, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but it's like, you know, that almost seems like the other world, like this something that happens to other people sort of thing. Like,
yes.
Like I know this is the third time, but what are those feelings that you get when something like this happens?
That's a really good way to put it. Cause I think the first time that it happened, it felt like, you know, a break in the system or something, or like an accident. It really did. Like I felt the way I perceived myself and sort of the award sort of section of it all, I just felt like it was very far away, and in a lot of ways it isn't. Like I think what I experienced from, you know, going to sort of the before events that you're supposed to show up to for those things when you're nominated, I remember wearing all black to one Spotify Grammy party, and, you know, a bunch of people gave me their drinks because they thought I was working there, you know? So it's like the idea of you've made it, or you're famous and everyone knows who you are once you get nominated, was completely shattered. And that was really important for me. It was, because it was important to see that it wasn't indeed as far away as I thought. And it was also really important to see that it wasn't, and like, I have to be careful when I speak about it, because I am very grateful. And it's always like, it, you can't run away from the fact that it feels good to get a sort of nod like that. But it really helped me to put my head down and not make music to receive that again. I think when it came and went the first time, I fully expected it to be the last. And I really did. And I you make peace with that, even, you know, and I didn't win, and I was still able to be like, I want to just make music that's good. And whether that's acknowledged or not, that's okay, as long as I believe in it. And, you know, that's much harder said than done, but I really do believe that that's the right way to make art, and, you know, it's the right motive.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, and it's working well for you. And that is hilarious to hear that they were giving you your drinks, because unfortunately at a party like that, you can't even rely on tips. It's not like you could like, I'm going to use this to my advantage. Like, that's just, you get nothing.
It was just a bunch of drunk, well-meaning people that just, you know, didn't want to be responsible for their glasses anymore, which is fine. I get it. But it was the perfect wake-up call for me.
And black's such a classic color, I would have thought, but...
I still think so. That's all I wear anymore.
Well, let's get into Revealer. I mean, again, for all the things that you just said, and that I've complimented already, it is such an outstanding record. And we've heard some things about it so far. I think you've said it a few times, like, it at times was a difficult record, it sounds like, to make. Is that because of what you're writing about? And I'll let you talk about that some too. Or was it, you know, other things going on in your life? Like, what exactly made this difficult when it was?
I mean, yeah, I think there was an element in writing the songs that were difficult because of what I was writing about, and sort of the work that it takes to dig that deep, and to be sort of using yourself as the primary example of like someone not doing well. It's not an easy place to be, and honesty is not really an easy pill to swallow for any of us, but especially in terms of songwriting. And I think it also found me in the, you know, in the middle of COVID, and I just had a really hard time seeing through a broader lens. It just all felt so close and distorted and confusing that it just, like, I think writing was never a happy place for me, writing the album. It just wasn't enjoyable. It just was all, a lot of it was duty, and a lot of it was the duty to myself to like work these things out, and to, you know, cause it does ultimately help to flesh them out on paper and in song. So yeah, it's, you know, I also have thought about past interviews where I've said, yeah, it was so hard to make this album. And then I've rolled my eyes at myself because I'm like, you're so lucky to get to do this with your life. And I do think that, and to get to like make music and to quote unquote suffer over it. That's so like, so poetic, but really it was a lot. It was just a lot uglier than that. Like it just is and was, and I've now adopted it in a very healthy way, because I think I can look back at these songs. I feel like there was something I was able to write beyond my situation, which means that it doesn't remind me of the situation that I was in necessarily. Like, I think it pays tribute to it, but it doesn't, I don't dread playing the songs. I really enjoy them. And I'm proud of that, at least.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Madison Cunningham. Well, I'll say that the poetry, you know, it's, I'm drawn to so many things, the guitar riffs, you know, et cetera, but the poetry on this, because what you're talking about writing beyond, like, it wasn't, I don't think it was ever immediately obvious to me what you were writing about. You know, I hear about the things as I read and listen to your interviews later. Of course, you talk about losing your grandmother and what's going on there and how that works its way throughout the record. And those moments that it's not like you say that, you know, it is in these poetic ways that seem to mean like, I like what I think I get most out of your writing is that I can study it, you know, and wait for it and kind of let it become these things to me. And I don't know, like when you're writing it, I mean, because again, let's, you know, if you don't mind, you have those personal moments, a loss of a dear one. Like, how did you want to approach that?
I don't know that I had time to think about how I wanted to approach it. Cause I think a lot of it was just happening. And all I knew was that I wanted to come out with something that felt like something that would maybe even be a progressive revelation to myself. Cause I think it's important to not be clear when nothing is clear, meaning like, don't write from an unrealistic place because you wish it was that way, right? Just write from the place that you're in. And so I think I wasn't really thinking a whole lot about how I wished that it would come out. I was just trying to get something that I was, because there was a lot of songs that were written out of a place of just needing to have songs, and they will never, you know, be seen or heard from again. And that's okay. That's for the better. That's like that's the process. I think what this last record taught me was to fall in love with the process, even the hardships of it. And I felt like I became an adult in songwriting this time, because I was faced with like not only deadlines, but like a really difficult year and losing myself and finding it again. And realizing that there are songwriting tools that can write you out of situations. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, we got to have our tricks to get us there. I think even the greatest writers probably have their tricks.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I think that's all we have at the end of the day. Like there's talent, right? And there's passion, but there's also just like practical, I guess, methods to get you out of your own head. And I had a lot of people in my life who were able to provide some of those. You know, I have a friend who I will often call upon and ask for advice. And I thought that really taught me a lot about musical community and how important that is, and to like be very honest with when you're struggling as a writer, and to look to other writers for advice and inspiration and all those things. And I leaned into that a lot.
Well, I love, especially when the album opens up, you've got All I've Ever Known, and here you are in a van on the road in a great tradition of second albums and songs about the road. It's almost like, I feel like it's probably inescapable for a lot of artists. Like, and that's not a criticism at all. Like, that's just part of the deal. Like if you land at a certain spot after the first record, if you get lucky and everything's kind of lining up and you get to take it out, like that second record, but do you find yourself like in that position? Do you lean into it?
Into like writing about the road?
Yeah, because there's also little moments that aren't specifically about the road, but you know, In From Japan is a song. Like here we hear, now we have Places. Little Tokyo is mentioned on All of Ever. You know, it's those little moments right there throughout it.
I do like the feeling of a record being sort of in transit, like it's going somewhere. And I think, I guess I kind of picture me in this 15 passenger van for like a couple songs through the album, and then it just like crashes at some point. And then, you know, you're like getting out of the van and you're just like break a window to get out of it, cause it's like on its head. And then you're like, okay, now what is this world? What does it look like to be on land again? And I feel like, you know, that is what's so interesting about the sequencing of the album, was that was the first, All I've Ever Known was the first song that I wrote for it, but it was literally written like days before the pandemic. And then everything else was me just trying to like, you know, like find my way out of the darkness of of that time.
Does hospital find us after you've crashed? Is that where we are in the story at that point?
That might be the crash, honestly. Okay. And then everything gets worse.
Yeah. Where did that first line come from? I was thinking like when that first came up.
You'll never see me dying. That one on screen or microscope. Oh, I don't know. Well, the first line that I had for that song was regret is like an infant that won't let you sleep it off. And I was excited about it. It made my wheels turn. And then I was like, I've got to find like a way to sort of at least set that line up or outdo it a little bit. Cause it's, I think your song is as good as your first line. Like that kind of sets the tone. And so I don't remember how that one ended up coming to be. But I liked the idea of somebody just being really, you know, bratty to someone who's just trying to pry into their life and like have good intentions about it. But it's just like, you're never going to get it. You're never going to know because I'm not going to let you have it. But the irony in that song is that this person is showing their cards the whole time, but they have like a lot of ego around the fact that like no one's in on the joke. No one can see what's happening, but it's like apparent to everybody. They're all just too nice to like, you know, let this person know it.
I know there's a word for this and I forget what the word is, but I had misheard a line in there and didn't know that I had misheard. I, you know, because you, a lot of times when that happens, you think you've got the right line, you're singing along, and I was so impressed with what I thought you were saying. And I'm not less impressed, but once I read the lyrics, and it wasn't until I was actually studying for this interview that I read the lyrics and I was like, wait a second, I've got this wrong. And it's in the chorus.
Because
you say, I'm always one man down, right? That's the line. And I thought you said, I'm always warming down, like the opposite of I'm warming up to something. And I was like, wow, that's a great line.
I'm always warming down.
Yeah. Damn. So listen, I don't think anybody's got that yet. So if it works for you.
Thank you very much, Kyle. I appreciate that.
I don't know. Anyway,
I'm always warming down. I'm going to be thinking about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've never thought of the opposite. You know, you warm up for something, but if you're always warming down for it, like that's a good line.
That isn't that like, I guess to give like secrets away for songwriters, like that is the sort of like key to writing something that people are like, ooh, that's very clever.
Yeah.
All you do is just like change one thing that the ear is used to hearing and then remove it with its sort of opposite or something. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, genius.
I mean, I think Nashville's made an entire industry out of doing just that right there. Like, want to write a topical country or not a topical, want to write a hot country song? Just flip a phrase. That's all it's about. Yeah.
It's so true. Money is easy to make, it turns out. It's right there.
And we'll be right back right after this. Two, set, pop.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska named three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Madison Cunningham. Speaking of other music, too, you started the year with a bit of other people's music because you expanded the Wednesday EP. Were those just left? We were talking about Poses and Jeff Buckley, Lover. Were those just leftover songs, or were those newly added to it? Like, and why did you want to expand it at that point?
Why did we expand it? I remember why. So those songs, every song on that EP were recorded for the same thing. I was doing this online, like every Wednesday I would release a cover. So that is why we called it Wednesday. And we added those two songs because we wanted to print vinyl. And it was just, the EP was just a little bit too short to make it worth it. So we added a deluxe version. And then we added one of my original songs to it as well. I was going on the road, and that's why we did it.
So it's necessity, is it really?
It was desperation, I guess.
Oh God, I loved them though. I mean, your version of Lover is so good, with Buckley's stuff there, and you've talked about, you know, Jeff. I've been like, Grace is Grace. It's one of the greatest albums of all time. Have you ever spent any time with Skechers to My Sweetheart the Drunk?
I think I've scoured the internet and streaming platforms for everything that he's ever done. I became just obsessed with him, unlike any other artist. I said this the other day, and I'd never said it before, but it made sense. I felt like I was very like haunted by him. Like, it was this really interesting feeling of just like, he really affected me as an artist, but also just like his sound and his spirit, and also the fact that like right now he'd be 52 or something, and he'd be probably making music we all still really looked up to. And that just, you know, that can break your heart a million times over, you know?
Especially because like, I've listened to that record since the record, whatever compilation, it's hard to call it because it's Skechers, but it was like, it probably would have been looked, because The Witch's Rave and New Year's Day. I mean, all of those songs on there, you know, anyway. It's not a question. I'm just happy to find someone else to talk about Jeff Buckley with today.
I answered it though, for your non-question.
and one more on the other people thing too. You did Passengers with Eva O'Donovan, and that's another one of my favorite songs of the year. I'd just love to hear about that song and friendship, or and anything you got for it.
Yeah, Aoife and I met a handful of years ago. I want to say through Live From Here, that radio show that I used to duet partner with Chris Thiele. I think I did 25 shows with him. That was a really, that was like a college course on the most difficult music you've ever done or never done. And we just hit it off. She is one of the most hilarious people that I know. And I know Joe Henry, who produced that record Age of Apathy, and they, during the, you know, pandemic, they reached out for me to add some guitar and sing, and so I did that remotely, and I just am amazed at how that record feels like it could have been accomplished in one sitting, but I'm pretty sure every player was just like amateurly trying to just engineer themselves and make it feel right. And also I say amateurly really for myself, because I was having a hard time, but it worked out.
Yeah, it's cool. And the riffs are good in there. And I mean, then that's, I think what you and I have talked one other time, it was a phone interview during the first record. And I remember thinking like, I just can't gush about her riffs the entire time because they're so interesting. But you know, once I caught wind that, you know, Matt Chamberlain does some drumming on here, I thought that's really interesting because for as much as you work the fretboard, for what it sounds like to me, you're like, what are you looking for in a drummer? Because Matt's one of my favorite drummers of all time.
Me too. I mean, sometimes I look for somebody who is willing to play drums in a way that isn't always the conventional way of playing drums. And I think that's the most interesting music to me is music that sort of T-bones you and doesn't give you any indication that it's going to go where it does. And I think Matt has all of those instincts and more. He's so proficient and such an accurate shot. Like, he's always hitting the target. And that one song that we did together, Anywhere, was in 7, and he had one of his own solo projects that I got to sing on, and hearing him, I was like, oh, he loves all of that stuff. Like, that is his wheelhouse, that's his world that he I think relishes. And so we brought him in for this song. I had zero lyrics. I just knew that we had a whole arrangement, and he seriously nailed it in like probably four takes. I think the fourth take, it was like this fully formed idea, you know, crossing all of these really different sections. And it kind of blew, you know, blew my mind. And that's just the sort of player that he is. He's a stone cold killer, but very sensitive and creative and in tune with the song. So he played on a handful, and I just could not respect and love him more.
You two work well together on that. It really does. He seems to bring that out. I mean, when I think of some of the stuff he's done with Tori and with Fiona and even with Painted Shield that he's been doing lately, I mean, that's, it always just adds that. Yeah, I love it anyway.
All my favorite record. I mean, he played on Regina Spektor stuff, like almost all of the records that I've ever loved, he's played on. And it's kind of, yeah, it's so mind-blowing to me.
Madison, I love Revealer, and that's obvious because I've said it so many times. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today. I so appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time for me.
And my thanks to Madison Cunningham. The new album is called Revealer. Big thanks to you as well for, again, checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show starting at 6 p.m. every weekday. Song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media spots, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them is at Kyle Meredith. Do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I could tell everybody to stop calling me, but I won't.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.